We refer to these magi often as wise men, but of course the application for us today is not just to look, not just to study, be informed, make sure we're not culturally ignorant of what takes place in the Christmas story, but to say, am I a wise man? Am I a wise person? Am I following the revelation that God has given? Am I not just observing it, but am I actually tracking? Am I actually life-altering in accordance with what I have seen? And then finally, what's at the end of that? What is the end of my spiritual journey? What should I expect? So the question today, as we think about homage, what do you give to a king? That's a theme that has been celebrated and pondered and thought about for many, many years. What do you give to a king? Well, I read the USA Today list of the best luxury gifts that are worth the spend in 2023. All right, so if you haven't done your Christmas shopping, there's still time. All right? One of the gifts here, I noticed, there's just a handful of them. The Ladies One Ocean Beauty Travel Kit. Okay? Don't do it, husbands. Don't do it. It's a travel kit. They're going to expect that there's also a ticket for travel in there somewhere. They're going to look at the creams and lotions and potions, and then they're going to start digging through all the paper, right? And go, yeah, but what's the travel? I don't advise it. Another one of them was a Dyson vacuum. I'm kind of sticking with the husbands here today. If you don't know not to get your wife an appliance for Christmas, go ahead and do it. I can't teach you otherwise. You just have to learn that the hard way. Here's a vacuum, dear. Want to try it now? You know, that sort of a thing. But just in case you do, that would explain why you get the third item on the list, husbands. You get the always bigger carry-on suitcase. Adios, big guy. Right? These are some of the things on the list, but I don't think they're even close to luxury. Is that, I mean, it might be a spendy gifts a bit, right? But I don't think it's luxury. How about a flash drive is a nice practical gift. Just about everybody has to move some files around sometime or store some photos. A nice 32 gigabyte number might be just the thing. A Swiss outfit is offering its magic mushroom. I hadn't thought of that. You'd have to be on mushrooms to do this, I think. Magic mushroom flash drives just in time for the holidays. You'll have to choose. I've got up there the pink sapphires. That's the low end. That's $16,500. All right. If you want to move up a bit, because she's worth it, right? Red rubies, $24,400. And if you want to go for the top, go for the green emeralds. That's a $36,900 price tag for 32. That's a lot of gigabytes, right? Wow. Now we're talking luxury. A few years back, the can't-miss Christmas gift was the world's most expensive wreath. This is not one that you should probably hang on your door unless you've got 24/7 armed guards. This was created by Posse Jokinen Carter of Flora Unicorn Flowers in the United Kingdom. It cost $4.5 million. 2-foot diameter wreath has 16 rubies, 32 diamonds, including a vivid red 17.49 carat ruby, 3.03 carat yellow diamond. I'll skip the rest, you get the idea. The beauty of this gift, it seems extravagant, but you can take off the jewels and use them for some other purpose later. The greenery does actually perish. All right, that's all pretty exotic. That is right up there at the top, but I'm guessing that the real extravagance is probably quite common in our country this year. The most extravagant gift of all has happened in many of your families. It's right here. It's the gift that never stops costing you. A puppy for Christmas, right? What do you give to a king? What did the wise men bring? What can we learn from them about our own giving in worship and homage? Our scripture this morning comes from Matthew. Simple little verse that we're quite familiar with. Matthew 2, verse 11 says, "And going to the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. And then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh." So put yourselves in that position a little bit and think about what you might offer to Jesus today. In short, these magi or wise men paid homage. That's respect with an element of reverence. Respect would be a simple handshake. Reverence going along with it would be maybe a deep bow in our culture, right? More to it than just the ordinary respect that you might give anyone, including a stranger. It's elevated. There's more to it when we talk about homage. Our translation says worship. That might give you the wrong impression. The Greek word proskuneo means to prostrate oneself. So most likely, we do see them in a pose that it comes to our imagination. Eastern men bowing before this Jesus in a deep bow right down to the ground to pay respect or to show reverence. I think we can learn a couple of things from this text. First of all, gifts for a king should celebrate his majesty. A gift that is appropriate for a king should celebrate his majesty or should acknowledge who he is, should pay respect for his position, to acknowledge that it's not just an ordinary politeness, it's something far greater than that. We recognize a king's significance. A king's significance. There has always been speculation about the meaning of the gifts that Matthew records. And you're, I'm sure, familiar with some of these. Gold, because Jesus was a king. But also representing the Old Testament sanctuary where God dwells. There was an element of deity associated with gold. Frankincense, because Jesus was a priest. And the prayers of the priests rose to heaven in clouds of incense in the worship of that day. And myrrh as a foreshadowing of Jesus' death, where myrrh was used for embalming. So we have the hymn that we started a variation of this morning, "We Three Kings." Goes like this: "Born a king on Bethlehem's plain, gold I bring to crown him again. King forever, ceasing never, over us all to reign." Second gift here: frankincense to offer have I. Incense owns a deity nigh. Prayer and praising, all men raising, worshiping him God most high. And then finally, the myrrh. Myrrh is mine. Its bitter perfume breathes of life, of gathering gloom. Sorrowing, sighing, bleeding, dying, sealed in the stone-cold tomb. But these things, these associations that we make, are connections that we make now, after the fact. You know, it's always great to look back in history and say, well, I think this means this and this means this. We have no idea what the kings actually intended. We don't know what these wise men intended. We can only have reasonable guesses. So how do we know that these were suitable gifts if we're not for sure what they represent? There's two real simple observations that are actually in the passage that might connect with us today as we think about, well, what gift do I bring? All right? Number one, they were kingly. Number two, they were costly. Kingly, first of all, what is agreed is that these were not last-minute trinkets from the bazaar. These gifts were taken from their treasures. You remember that when they saw the star and began their journey, they journeyed for this purpose, right? It wasn't, let's go see what might happen. They knew they were looking for a king. So when they put their treasures together and they gathered their things, they knew what their intention was. We don't know how many wise men there were. Traditionally, there's three. We don't know. It's not in the text. But when you are a wise man and you're taking a journey, you take your treasure with you. You don't have the debit card, right? And you can't quick reach out and get, you know, call home, say send over some money. You need to take money for an adventure, a long one, a long journey. So you take your treasure with you. You travel in a caravan that's large enough to protect it. It's dangerous out there on the roads. And so you can imagine with me a large caravan that included these respected scholar, these wise men, and among that caravan, there were treasures that they had prepared precisely for the purpose of offering them to a king. These magi had not turned aside to see something. They had traveled the great trade routes of the day, the king's highway, the royal highway, and they had come to Bethlehem for this purpose. So they were kingly. They were also costly. Anybody know the price of gold right now? I'm sure. What's that? Yeah, see, that makes sense. Rich guy up front here. He's got the expensive seat. Thanks, Gary. Yeah, about $2,100 an ounce. We don't know. Of course, value systems have changed, but experts believe that gold was just as valuable. If we can't make a dollar comparison, it was just as valuable to them as it is to us. Near the top. What might be a surprise is that frankincense and myrrh rosin was even more costly than the gold. Even less available, even more valuable. So these were expensive gifts. What's the point? Well, if you're at the gas station and you're pumping gas in your tank and accidentally the $5 Walmart gift card falls out of your pocket, right? And the lady looks over from the next car and she says, oh, you dropped something there. And you pick it up and you go, you know what? Why don't you keep it? Merry Christmas. That's a fine thing to do, but it isn't kingly, and it isn't costly. There's no investment there. There was no preparation, and it means very little. Nice gesture, don't get me wrong, but it's not kingly, it's not costly, and therefore it would not be suitable for one who is a king. If you're thinking that Jesus is the reason for the season, you really ought to consider giving him a gift, a suitable one, a suitable gift. But there's more here. I once won a half of a pig in a raffle at Sarpy County Fair. They didn't divide him right there. I picked it up later. And that was nice, but I didn't get any warm, fuzzy feelings when I showed up at the meat locker, right? I showed up, gave him the winning ticket, and they went, frozen pig. There you go. It didn't come from anywhere. There was no heart strings connected to this. I didn't hear any violins or harps play when I picked up my half a hog out in Elkhorn at the locker. The best gifts for a king express heartfelt devotion. Kingly, costly, that's suitable, but also express the element of homage that is devotion, loyalty, fealty in the old way of speaking. The gold, the frankincense, the myrrh came from the wise men's treasures, but they also came from their worship. From their treasures, something you can carry and unpack, but also from their worship, something that is with you all the time. Something that you are always gifting to someone or something. We must consider where that best devotion is going. I'm still hopeful that these guys really got it because Matthew used that phrase, they fell down and worshiped him. I can't say for sure. There's no word there that says absolutely these were people who got it. Jesus Christ was not just a king of the Jews. He was the special one, the anointed, the Messiah one, the fulfiller of prophecies, God's own. I don't know. I don't know if they got it. I do know that they fell down and worshiped him, and I can hope. The gifts were a concrete expression of something that they really felt. It wasn't an obligatory office gift, right? It was an expression of what was going on in their hearts. With homage, you leave yourself with the gift to some degree. You know what I'm saying? With homage, you put the gift at the feet of the king. But when you walk away, you've also left something of yourself there with him. Your devotion, your respect, your reference. And so if you're thinking that Jesus is the king, your gift this year should be heartfelt as well. What do you give a king for Christmas? Appropriate and expressive. You give him homage. Jesus was born in Bethlehem. He was a king for the Jews. But we know that he was not just a king for the Jews. He was the special anointed Messiah king for the whole world. This Messiah came to rule the world in love and justice. But when he was rejected, he voluntarily gave his life to make peace between God and men. I sincerely believe that. I hope you do too. I've got precious little experience with kings, but let me suggest just a couple of thoughts as you make that leap from what happened in Bethlehem so many years ago to our own meeting with the king and our own gifts that we might bring. When you visit a king, you don't just stomp up to the throne, open your basket, and present your chicken. All right? When you visit a king, you first acknowledge the greatness and the benevolence of that king. The first impulse is not about, oh, look what I brought. I bet you needed one of these, right? The first impulse is, oh, great king, thank you for the blessings that I experience because of your reign. That's first. Some of you might be asking this question, is Jesus worthy of that kind of homage? Do I recognize Jesus as the one who has allowed me to prosper? Is Jesus the one who's responsible for all the grace and the love that I experience in my life? If that's your question, then I don't point you to the manger this morning. We're here to celebrate that, but I would point you not even to the cross. I'd point you to the empty tomb, if that's your question. Is Jesus the one that I should bow to? Is this Jesus the one that I should reserve my homage for? Then I would point you to the empty tomb. Because if Jesus actually did come back to life, as history records in the gospel, then you've got to come to some conclusions. And you can get guidance on that. You can read and you can talk to people and you can phone a friend or whatever the case may be. But the conclusions have to be yours. In the end, the conclusion that you reach about who was this Jesus that said he was going to die, be buried, and be in the tomb for 3 days and then rise, and then actually did, then you got to, well, what happened there? You got to come to that conclusion. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 20 says, we implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. And if you're wondering, if you're in that stage, if you consider yourself a seeker, a wise man who has wandered far but hasn't quite yet come to the manger, you're taking the double route through the desert, you're still thinking about these things, good for you, keep seeking. But I would say, I beg you, be reconciled to God. Now, if you're convinced that Jesus is Lord, if you acknowledge the blessings of his kingdom and you're still wondering what to give, first of all, I'd advise you not to get practical, right? You don't bring a practical gift to a king. He doesn't need anything, right? So don't be thinking, oh, what does God need this Christmas? What do I have? Who am I? What is it about me that he needs? You're kind of getting off the track here. What he wants is close, personal, loving relationship. I actually heard Jesus' last prayer. Well, I didn't hear it. It's recorded for us in John. And when he prays to God in John chapter 17, listen to what he says. John chapter 17, I made known to them, disciples, your name. I'll continue to make it known that the love which you, Father, have loved me may be in them. That is, that we would share this love of the Son that God the Father has with Jesus Christ. That's what he wants. So he's praying. I pray that we would share the same sort of respect, esteem, and homage, love for the Son that God the Father and God the Son already share. You know what? We might dream of some extraordinary gift or sacrifice. Some of you have been following the Lord, come to the manger long ago. And you might dream of some extraordinary gift or sacrifice. But more often, we're challenged by simple expressions that take us out of our comfort zones. More often, it's the little acts of homage that catch us off guard. Just acknowledging him, just giving him a place in your room or at your table might be the first step. So I would encourage you, be prepared to make awkward but somehow heartwarming attempts at Christmas homage.